Well, we're especially thankful for those of you who are visiting with us this morning. We're happy that you're here. A lot of our people are gone, and a lot of people plan to be gone next week, but we're happy that you're here, and we hope that our study together will be beneficial and profitable to all. We're in the 14th chapter of the book of Acts, in a study of the book of Acts. We're studying from the perspective of trying to learn the efforts of the New Testament apostles and prophets in their efforts to preach the gospel and spread it during first century times. We've noted that the book of Acts, and I was particularly interested in the comment made by someone as I had made this comment. They were unaware that the book of Acts is a book of history. And by the way, this is to the credit of our website. Somebody was listening on the website and had made the comment. They heard the statement made that the book of Acts is the book of history, and it performs the function of being a skeleton upon which you can hang the New Testament epistles. And that's right, and we need to learn that and know that and use the book of Acts in that way. And, of course, that takes on added significance when we see the spreading of the gospel. Jesus told the apostles in Acts, the first chapter, that they would be His witnesses in Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria, and to the uttermost parts of the world. And that's what the book of Acts is about. And we need to note that and use it to that end in our efforts to teach those who are not Christians and to build up those who are. Now, in our study this morning, I had planned to go through the questions on Acts chapter 14. But we have kind of a skeleton crew this morning, and I think that it would probably be better. I'm going to skip over some of that material and utilize that perhaps next time with Randy, as he will teach the class. We'll be gone next week. But I do want to note just a few of the things as we have from time to time as we review from the book of Acts. One of the objectives that you know that I have in our study of the book of Acts to try to remember what's in each chapter. How many times do we study with people and we recall certain portions of text? Perhaps we can quote certain portions of text, but to know where it's found, we're at a loss. We don't know where it is. And we say, well, I know the Bible says this, but I don't have the slightest idea where. And even if we can identify, well, it's in the book of Acts. Well, yes, but there are 28 chapters in the book of Acts. So where do we locate it in the book of Acts? And what I want us to be able to do is for someone to be able to recall the particular chapter that we read about something in the book of Acts. For example, if we're talking about examples of conversion in the book of Acts, we're going to do this. I want you to be able to tell me what chapters we read of conversions in the book of Acts, and must get them in order, because the book of Acts is a book of history, and we can do that. We can put them in order and know the chapters that they're in. If we are talking about the epistles and we want to know a little bit about, let's say we're studying the book of Ephesians, and I want to know a little background on the establishment of the church in Ephesus, there's a book in Acts or a chapter in Acts that I want to reference. And what would that be? We've got the travels of Paul, and we know that he came to the city of Ephesus. And where would that be? Acts 19, that's right. And if I'm studying the books of 1st and 2nd Corinthians, and I want a little background information as we look at this skeleton in the book of Acts, where do we read of Paul coming to the city of Corinth, the church being established in Corinth, you see? That would be in Acts chapter 18, you see. Now, if we have that information at our fingertips, is there anybody that would say, well, that won't help me in teaching the gospel to somebody? Well, I guarantee you it will. I had a fellow one time ask me, he said, I just don't see any point in us memorizing this. And he was rather adverse about that. I said, well, I'm not asking you to memorize it. What I'm asking you to do is to learn it, so that 10, 20, 30 years from now, I can ask you to tell me the conversions in the book of Acts, and you can not only list them in order, but you can tell me the chapters they're found in. and so forth and so on, with many details in the book of Acts. And I believe we can do that. Now, I've talked with folks before who said, I'll never do that. You all remember old Lena. Bless her sweet little heart. She said, I'll never be able to remember that. 80-some years old. And before it was all said and done, she had the book of Acts down. And so we can do that. We can do that. And we'll be better equipped, I think, in our service to the Lord for studying in that way. In what chapter do I read about the ascension of Christ? Well, I gave you a hint. That's in chapter 1. All right, the second thing. Peter's third sermon before the Jewish Sanhedrin, the Jewish court. What chapter, Sarah? His third sermon. Chapter 4. Very good. Paul before the Jewish Sanhedrin. Bruce? 23. The conclusion of the first journey. Jenny, conclusion of the first journey. 14. Very good. Paul before Festus. Lynn?
22.
Paul before Festus. Let's line it up for her, James.
25.
Well, yeah, but line it up for her.
He's before a mob, then he's before the...
Are arrested first.
Yeah, he's arrested. Then he's
what chapter?
21.
All right, and then?
22, he's in front of a mob of Jewish people. 23, he's in front of the Sanhedrin. 24 is Felix. 25 is Festus. And 26 is Agrippa.
All right. 26 is Agrippa. The horrible death of Agrippa the first. That was Agrippa the second, your reference. The horrible death of Agrippa the first. Chapter 12. Why did Agrippa die in chapter 12? The worms got him. That's right. Why?
Because he took the praise of men as a god.
All right. He took the credit of being God. Raising of Dorcas or Tabitha from the dead by the Apostle Peter. Betty Jo, raising of Dorcas. That's one I always have trouble in. Close. Anyone? 9. Chapter 9. Simon the Sorcerer, James.
8.
Yes, sir. Completion of the second tour, Donna.
Completion of the second. 18.
Okay. Paul with Aquila and Priscilla in Corinth. Now, keep in mind, we just talked about that. Lynn? 18. Paul was in Corinth in chapter 18. First evangelistic tour begins in Antioch, Donna. 13. You got that nailed. Paul and Silas at Thessalonica. Paul and Silas at Thessalonica. 17, yes. And, of course, we see in that context there just very briefly his desire as he writes the epistles was to come and supply that which was lacking, as we see in 2 Thessalonians chapter 3. You see how all that fits together when we know this skeleton or outline that's so helpful in our study of the epistles. Rachel, Gamaliel's advice concerning Christianity before the Jewish Sanhedrin. Okay, chapter 5. Missed that. Chapter 5. The first sermon under the gospel by Peter. First sermon. James?
2.
Alright, good. I've got to get my finger off that button. The second evangelistic tour begins, Donna. 15. All right, Stephen's defense and martyrdom. Stephen's defense and martyrdom. David?
End of 16 and 17.
All right. Paul stoned at Lystra. Now, everybody needs to get that one. Paul stoned at Lystra. Okay, that's where we're at now. Conversion of Cornelius. All right, 10. And let's do one more. Paul before Herod Agrippa the second. Now, James, this is where we were a while ago. 26. Peter's second sermon. His second sermon. What chapter?
Chapter
3. The healing of the impotent man at Lystra. All right, right here in 14. Demetrius the silversmith and his opposition to Paul. 19. What city?
Ephesus.
Yes. Apostolic miracles. All right, chapter 5, the apostles arrested by the... Pardon me? Well, yes, several, but in chapter 5 we read of several miracles. Yeah. Yeah, that's Ananias and Sapphira. The apostles arrested by the Jews, miraculously released. All right. And that ends us. All right, let's go back to the 14th chapter. That sheriff will come in. We might go ahead and do the review on the book, or the 14th chapter of the book of Acts, if you would like. I'm sure that most of you have that with you, and if you don't, there is a stack of them up here. Raise your hand. We'll see to it that you get one. Pardon me? Oh, you took them to the back? She took them to the back. Acts, the 14th chapter. Let's very quickly look at these. And one of the things that you know that I like to do with questions, I don't like to spend a lot of time on questions unless you have a question. Because all of the questions have to do with things that we've had some considerable study about as we went through the chapter. And so if you have a question, don't hesitate to ask. Otherwise, we'll just look at these and try to be more familiar with them. In the 14th chapter, one of the things that we've learned is that the Apostle Paul, having suffered intense persecution in the city of Lystra in particular, where they stoned him and thought they had killed him, he tells them that it's through many tribulations that we shall enter into the kingdom of God. We think that becoming a Christian, and that relieves all kinds of problems and sufferings and afflictions, that's just not so. I've had people talk with me, well, you know, I became a Christian, why does all this befall me? Well, becoming Christians doesn't relieve us of persecutions or difficulties in life. I've had folks raise the question to me regarding particular events in their life. Well, why did this happen to me? Well, there's another question that ought to follow on the heels of that. Why not? Where did God ever promise that when you become a Christian, you're free from all of that kind of thing? Well, He never made those promises, but rather instead, we see that those who live godly shall suffer persecution. 1 Timothy chapter 3 and in verse 12, and we see that illustrated from the establishment of the church and the beginning of the book or the chapters in the book of Acts. Chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5, chapter 7, as David pointed out, we read concerning the stoning of Stephen to death. So becoming a Christian doesn't mean that you're free from persecution. What we have illustrated on the board this morning is the first preaching tour of the Apostle Paul as Barnabas and he leave the church in Antioch and come down to the Isle of Cyprus, Salamis, and then on through the island to Paphos, and then on up into this area to Derbe, and then they backtrack and return to Antioch. And that's the close of the book, or the chapter, I keep saying book, the close of the chapter, chapter 14. I want to call your attention to just the last two or three verses of that chapter. In verse 26 of Acts chapter 14. It says, and thence they sailed to Antioch, from whence they had been committed to the grace of God for the work which they had fulfilled. And when they were come and had gathered the church together, they rehearsed all things that God had done with them, and that He had opened the door of faith unto the Gentiles, and they tarried no little time with the disciples. Now that's a most impressive text, and one of the things that I want you to be impressed with is the brevity of the revelation of God. Here, very simply, we read, they came back to Antioch, from which they had been sent out. And when they gathered the brethren together, the church together, they rehearsed the things that God had done with them, or among them, among the Gentiles. Now, when we go back in history, as we go back even to the 10th chapter, but here especially, we note back to the beginning of the 13th chapter, the beginning of the first preaching tour, we see many things that were done among the Gentiles. Now, among the Gentiles, this is going to become relevant in our study when we get into the 15th chapter. What had God done among the Gentiles? You say, well, He preached the gospel to them through these men. That's not all. What had God done among the Gentiles? That's right. He confirmed the word with signs and wonders. And we know that that becomes very relevant in the 15th chapter because the issue of circumcising Gentiles in order to save them becomes very troublesome to the church, and we'll talk more about that in just a little bit. Now, these worksheets that you have before you, three things, or basically four things, that I've asked you to do. One is to summarize certain paragraphs in the chapter, to summarize the paragraphs. Now, for those of you who may be visiting with us, I want you to note that in regard to this, we're not interested in just simply reading the paragraph. I'm not particularly interested in you writing down the paragraph in response to the question. But just in a one-sentence statement, tell me what's in the paragraph. Now, very simply put, I want you to read it and think about it and summarize it. Tell me what's in it. And Bruce, I'm going to start with you in chapter 14, verses 1 through 7. What's in that context? All right. All right, now, boil all that down. Just one brief statement. Paul and Barnabas, what are they doing? Preaching the gospel to? All right, they're preaching the gospel to the Jews and the Gentiles. Now, in these verses, you'll see where, as you can identify them. Verses 8 through verse 18, Chris Simmons. What's in that context? Very important.
Paul and Barnabas are in Lystra. The city attempts to worship them as gods.
All right, exactly right. Why did the city attempt to worship them, Jenny?
Because Paul healed the lame man, and so they decided that Paul was Hermes and Barnabas was Zeus.
All right, now the significance of that, I think we need to perhaps comment on just a little bit. Here we're looking at a significant Gentile city, and what do we always find in these larger Gentile cities? Or villages, as the case may be.
Idolatry.
Idolatry. And you see the Greek mythological characters that are identified in this context, which indicates their idolatrous practices. In chapter 14, verses 19 through 28. What's in those few verses, Donna? All right, that's a brief statement of several things. And yes, many things took place in those verses. Paul and Barnabas, Paul was stoned. They returned to the places that they've already visited, appoint elders, and then go back to Antioch. Now, identify the people. Now again, when we identify the people, our purpose is to try to learn what that individual did in that chapter. Yes, Bruce?
Also, they're confirming faith.
That's right. They're confirming what they've been teaching these people, exhorting them to continue in the faith. Yes. Now, you may say, well, that's kind of a general identification. A certain man, that's how he's referred to in the text. Who is this certain man of this chapter? Betty Jo? All right, he's crippled. Been crippled all of his life. Paul healed him. Now, Paul, don't tell me Paul was an apostle. In this chapter, what did Paul and Barnabas do? Paul and Barnabas. Chris Peters. Yeah, in this chapter. All right, they preached to the Gentiles. What else?
Paul healed the lame man.
Heals the lame man. What happened to him as a result?
He got stoned.
All right, eventually he was stoned. They thought they had killed him. And we've got another character to be identified. David, this priest of Jupiter. Who's he?
Well, in the Authorized Standard Version, it says Zeus.
All right.
So he wanted to offer sacrifice with the crowd and Paul Barnabas.
All right. He wants to praise Paul as some kind of
Greek god
and offer sacrifice to him. Jews from Antioch and Iconium. This always fascinated me. Who are these characters in this chapter? Jews from Antioch and Iconium. Isn't that interesting? You know, when I read of the travels of the Apostle Paul through the book of Acts, and we read of persecution often at the hand of those who were unbelieving Jews, have you ever wondered who was running the country? These unbelieving Jews seem to follow them from place to place to place to place to place and create problems. And so it is here in Antioch and Iconium. We've got these Jews that come down to other places and create problems in Lystra in particular and cause Paul to be stoned. The Gentiles in this chapter. Door was opened to them. Opportunity to preach. Paul frequently prayed that a door would be opened, calling upon others to pray that a door would be opened. And of course, we're to seize those opportunities. Identify the places. Iconium. What happened in Iconium in this chapter? Anybody?
Paul and Barnabas preached there, and ultimately they rejected.
All right. Very good. And they left and went from Iconium to Derbe. Lystra. That ought to ring a bell. What happened in Lystra? That's where Paul was stoned. And then, of course, they went to Derbe where they preached. And then they returned to Antioch. And what was the purpose of returning to Antioch? Significance. Antioch of Syria. They're reporting back. Yeah, rehearsing the things that have been done. Now, questions. We have a lot of questions on this chapter. But perhaps identify them carefully. Where in Iconium did Paul and Barnabas preach, and what resulted? Donna?
In the synagogue.
In the synagogue.
The unbelieving Jews, the Gentiles believed.
All right. Eve, you want to talk to me just a little bit? No. Well, maybe Dave will tell me. Dave, can you tell me? Why did Paul and others go to the Jewish synagogues when they went into these new places?
Well, during those days, that's where most people would go when they had any kind of thought or idea or some belief in God.
All right. Well, among the Jews, you would like to think that the Jews were familiar with the Old Testament scriptures. And just to illustrate our point, when we go over a little further in our text to Acts the 17th chapter, when they came into the Jewish synagogue in Thessalonica, what did they do? They opened and alleged that it behooved the Christ to suffer and to die on the cross and to be raised from the dead on the third day. Now you would like to think that the Jews who were familiar with the Old Testament text would know what the Old Testament text said. And so if you went into a Jewish synagogue, you'd like to think that you've got some kind of a common footing upon which to preach that Jesus is the Christ. Now, when they went into these Gentile cities, what is it that the Apostle Paul began to declare unto them? When you consider the Gentile cities that are mentioned in this chapter, and then on into the 17th chapter when they came into the city of Athens. What has to be declared first? Well, before you even get to that. All right, when you look in the 14th chapter, begin reading at verse 14. But when the apostles Barnabas and Paul heard it, they rent their garments and sprang forth among the multitude, crying out, saying, Sirs, why do you do these things? We are also men of like passions with you, and bring you good tidings, that you should turn from these vain things unto a living God. Now look at it. Who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that in them is. Now if you go into a Gentile city where various types of mythology are the dominant religions, you've got to first begin by teaching them that there's only one God. This idea of multiple gods, like you had in Athens and like you had here, that has to be countered. One has to understand that there's only one God. And that's what they did when they went into the Gentile cities. Number two, as we have previously learned in Acts, as well as in this text, what is included in the term believed? And you'll see that in verse 1. They believed. Donna? All right, they'd obeyed the gospel. We're reading about people who have obeyed the gospel. Now, if we isolate simply the acceptance of certain facts as being true, do we see a case in point where there were some among the Jews who were believers, but they loved the glory of men more than the glory of God? Right, and you know that to be found where? John 12, about 42. Yeah, that'd be about right. John chapter 12 is where you want to look for that. They love the glory of men more than the glory of God. Number three. Yes.
John 9:12.
No, John 12, verse 42. Right. Number three, who are those who are contrasted to the believing Jews and Greeks? That's an easy one. Unbelieving Jews and Greeks, those who were disobedient. What was done which made the Gentiles evil affected against the brethren? Notice the quotation. Alright, the unbelieving Jews stirred them up, and that was the result. I don't know why that's that way. Number five, in what way did the Lord help Paul and Barnabas in their work in Iconium? Someone answered that a while ago. What'd they do?
Signs and wonders.
That's right. Signs and wonders. Letter A under that. What is revealed about the length of their stay there in Iconium? Stayed a long time. Now, we've studied that somewhat on Wednesday night. Yes, Bruce?
Yeah, I just wanted to go back to number one.
All right, to number one?
Yeah, number one, because, you know, even in believing, you know, like in Romans chapter 1, verse 16, you know, believing in the gospel, but also that the gospel was not only believing for the Jews, but it was also for the Gentiles as well.
Well, that's right. The gospel was to be preached first to the Jews and then to the Gentiles. And what we find here is the unbelieving Jews stirring up the Gentiles to create problems for Paul and Barnabas. Number six, what was the condition of the city in relation to Paul and Barnabas? Anyone?
They were divided.
They were divided. Why? All these unbelieving Jews got everybody all tore up. Number seven, what efforts were attempted against Paul and Barnabas, and who was involved in this effort? Well, no, before we get to that, the Jews and the Gentiles and the rulers, what did they do? All right, that's right. They stirred them up and created problems. Paul is stoned. What resulted as a result of this evil plot? I think I just answered that. They fled unto Lystra and Derbe and the regions round about. Number nine, what man is described from Lystra and what did Paul do for this man? Betty Jo, you answered that a while ago.
A certain man, yes.
Pardon me? Paul healed him, that's right. Been impotent from birth. Number ten, how did the people react to what was done? David? All right. Going to worship Paul and Barnabas. Number 11, what did the people call Paul and Barnabas? James?
Well, we have
All right, Mercury and Jupiter, or
Zeus and Hermes.
Zeus and Hermes. That's right. One Roman name, one Greek name. What did the certain priests do? And I think that's been answered. What did the priests do? All right, number 13. We got some stuff that's not animated right. Number 13, how did Paul and Barnabas react to this action? They would not accept worship. That's right. Now, Jesus made a statement in Matthew chapter 4 when Satan tempted him, saying, bow down before me and worship me. What did Jesus say? It is written. Thou shalt worship, Matthew chapter 4. Thou shalt worship the Lord thy God, and him only shalt thou serve. I forget the verse, Mom. Matthew chapter 4, verse 10. Verse 10. Jesus accept worship? What'd that prove about who he is?
All right.
Well, that's right. And Paul did not accept worship. Why?
Because he's not God.
He's not God.
He and Barnabas were just men like you.
That's right. Number 14. Explain the usage of the term apostle as it is here applied to Barnabas. Did we discuss that in the Wednesday night class, I think? Or was that in this class we discussed that? Perhaps both. How the term apostle, what does it simply mean? One sent forth. That's right. Now, we see the term apostle used in this chapter in reference to both Paul and Barnabas. How's it used in reference to Barnabas? Who sent him forth? The church at Antioch sent him forth. And, of course, we note in the first verse or two that he and Paul were separated by the Holy Spirit for the church at Antioch to send forth. Was Barnabas an apostle in the same sense that Paul was? No, he was not. But that term is used in reference to him in the sense that he was sent by the church in Antioch. What did Paul and Barnabas say to this multitude?
That they weren't God, that there's only one God, and that he has witnessed in everything around
him. All right. He created all that is. And you see that in what, verses 14 and 15? Number 14, explain the usage. I've already got that somewhere. Let's see. Where did Jews come from in pursuit of Paul? That's our next question. Number 16.
Antioch
and Iconium. What did they do in Lystra? They stoned Paul. They left him for dead. Number 17, what did Paul do while the disciples stood round about him? He got up and went back into the city. I tell you what, now, just as reflection upon that, would you do that? Somebody had been so angry with you, they've stoned you and they thought they'd killed you, and you got up, would you go back into the same city? You think you'd come there another time? Which he did after a little bit of time. Yes. No? Number 18. Where did Paul go next?
Derby.
What was the result of their preaching in that city? They taught many. Now, I want to pause just here and make this comment. The work of the apostles under the instruction of Jesus was to go make disciples, baptizing them. Go preach the gospel to every creature. He that believeth and is baptized shall be saved. The message of repentance and remission of sins was to be preached to every creature under heaven, according to Luke's account, chapter 24. My question is this. The work of the apostles, did Jesus command them to convert everybody they taught? No. What was their primary function? Go and teach. Go and teach. Now, that we need to emphasize. Go and teach. That's your job. As Jesus gave that instruction to the apostles. Go and teach. Does that mean that you're going to be successful in converting everybody you teach? Well, obviously not. The Lord wasn't. The apostles weren't. And we see evidence of that in this chapter, that sometimes their preaching raised up opposition to the extent that they were persecuted. Number 20. After preaching in Derby, where did they go and what did they do? Anybody?
They went back around and exhorted them to continue in the faith, and after many tribulations, we must enter the kingdom of heaven.
All right, that's right. They went back to Lystra, interestingly enough. Iconium and Antioch, confirming the disciples and so forth. Number 21. What was done in every church? They ordained elders in every church. Now, there's another passage I want you to tie with that, that we have on the board. They ordained elders in every church. One of the things that we need to know and need to teach is that when the apostles went from place to place, they didn't teach one thing to this group over here and teach something else to this group over here, something else to this group over here. The text tells us, the passage I have on the board, 1 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17, "For this cause have I sent unto you Timothy, who is my beloved and faithful child in the Lord, who shall put you in remembrance of my ways which are in Christ, even as I teach everywhere in every church." Now, what does that tell us? The same thing was taught everywhere the apostles went. Same thing. Well, that's right. You don't have to change the story if you tell the truth. But that's right. We've got one story being taught. One story being taught to everybody. Elders were ordained in every church. What is the divine pattern? Elders in every church. Now, I have known, and perhaps you have as well, of churches that didn't have elders. And why do churches sometimes not have elders? All right, sometimes we find that not men that are qualified. All right, that's a legitimate cause under certain circumstances. But Donna mentioned something that I want to suggest to you. Some churches don't have elders because they don't want elders. Some churches have been used to conducting things among themselves in such ways that they just don't want elders. They find that they get along better without elders. Now, friend, that's not the divine pattern. If we ever reach the point that we don't want to be like God has designed the church to be, then that's sinful. That's just sinful. And I want to hammer this point home. We talked about it, I think, briefly last week. But when we look at the qualifications of elders in 1 Timothy chapter 3 and Titus chapter 1, not our purpose this morning to study all the qualifications of elders, but that's where you read them. Those qualities, do they just happen overnight? No. Well then, if a church exists for 20, 30, 40 years, and we still don't have elders, never had elders, you think it'd perhaps be a good thing to maybe take a look at us and see if we're developing individually like we should be? You see, we've got a problem. The problem is that Christians are not growing and maturing like Christians ought to grow and mature. I made the comment a number of times, with the exception of a few of the domestic qualities, every single one of the qualities, a qualification of elders required of all of us, every one of them. So why would it seem to be a strange thing to find within a congregation that's existed 20, 30, 40 years, at least a plurality of men who have accomplished those qualities? Now, friend, we've got to reflect on that. If we falter on that, then we're not following what was taught in every church. Now, again, I don't want to belabor the point. Number 22, name the next few places that they traveled. James?
Pisidian and Pamphylia.
Yes, Pisidian, Pamphylia, Perga. All right. Number 23, what does Luke reveal concerning the end of their trip?
God opened the door of faith to the Gentiles.
God opened the door of faith unto the Gentiles, and they're rehearsing those things to the brethren in Antioch that have sent them out. Number 24, what did they do when they came to Antioch? I think I just answered that. When they came to Antioch, commended the grace of God that had been demonstrated among the Gentiles. Number 25, what had God done concerning the Gentiles? I don't know what's up with that. What occurred that resulted in this? Well, door of faith's been opened, but why? Why has the gospel now been preached unto the Gentiles? Who was the priest to first? Gee, what'd they do with it? They rejected it. And now it's preached among the Gentiles. Now, I've asked you to add to your chart the list of places visited by Paul in this chapter and identify the main things that happened in each place. Are you keeping up with that? That list? If you're not, let me suggest that you go back and catch up on that. I've got some things out of place on it. But here's a chart of the first preaching journey. And here's a list of the places in order that they visited. And what I'd like for you to do is to simply identify the place and tell me what happened there. Okay? Keep that list going. Because this is the first preaching tour. We're going to be looking at the second preaching tour. And I want you to do the same thing with that too. And that'll be a good review for you if you will do that. Any questions or comments pertaining to the 14th chapter? Now, I know we went through these questions hurriedly, but if you have a question or a comment, be happy to consider that. James?
You know, it strikes me here off the cuff that obviously the Jews who reject the gospel, they would want them anywhere within what they consider to be their territory, their homes, their towns, their synagogues. But once they start getting into Gentile territory, as it were, they still follow him around. Granted, he's going to the synagogues, and as his custom was, but they don't even want him teaching his stuff to the Gentiles. And
no.
That shows you how much disdain they've got for the gospel and for Paul and anyone carrying that message. Because you would think, you know, if a false teacher were to come among us and then move on, well, they would be out from among us. They're gone. They'll be someone else's problem. We're not running them down in race cars. But these guys are obviously putting aside a lot of plans and making it their business to follow these men all around, frankly, the world.
Yes.
Taking them around to stop him. And that just shows you the condition of their hearts. There's a lot of disdain and hatred for the message.
Yes. Yes, they don't want it preached anywhere. Anywhere. And you can see why. Up until this time, the Gentile was considered the heathen. He's of the nations, as it were. And we, the Jews, you see, we're God's chosen people.
We're the hot shots in there.
Yeah. And so here we go. All right. Well, I've got a lot more that I'd like to say on the 15th chapter. I want you to open your Bible there. We may at least get it introduced. Yes.
There's nothing new under the sun. This still goes on today.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it's not new.
I mean, people following the Lord and so forth, trying to work their campaigns.
Yeah.
And this continues.
Always been so. Always will be, I suppose. David?
Well, as we've been studying on Wednesday night, the ministry of Christ, that we've only touched, I mean, just began to touch the top of the, or tip the scale. How many times have we studied in that Wednesday night study where Jesus said, "Have you not read?" He was talking to the Jews.
Right.
And corrected them in their understanding of what the Scripture said.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Even up to the point where Paul and Barnabas are, they still didn't want to see what the Old Testament, the Old Law really taught. Still
yeah. Yeah. Very unfortunate. Now, in the 15th chapter, we want to note that the church has problems. Anybody here want to deny that? From time to time, the church has problems. The first problem that's introduced into the Lord's church is not in the 15th chapter of Acts, but this becomes a prominent illustration. Where do we read of the first problem among brethren?
Acts 6.
The Grecian widows. Yes, we've got a problem with Grecian widows. And we've got certain ones that think that their widows are being neglected in the daily ministration. How was that resolved? All right, the apostles gave instruction that you are to select from among yourselves, and they gave certain qualities that these men were to have, whom we may appoint over this business, so that it'll be resolved. Now, the names of the men that were selected, what nationality? They were all Greek. So if there's a problem now among the Grecian Jews, it's because you didn't take care of it. We gave you opportunity. You appointed Greek men to do this, men with Greek names, to take care of this. And so the problem was resolved. Now, when we come to the 15th chapter of the book of Acts, we've got a major problem. And we've mentioned that in the church in Jerusalem, Acts 2 through what? Before it spreads beyond Jerusalem. Where does the gospel then begin to be preached to the Samaritans? Acts chapter 8. All right. Now we've got the gospel being preached among Gentiles generally, beginning with the household of Cornelius in Acts chapter 10. And as we have studied concerning the church in Antioch, the church in Antioch, the first congregation, predominantly made up of both Jews and Gentiles. And now we've got trouble. We've got trouble. Paul and Barnabas have been on this first preaching tour, preaching among Gentiles as well as Jewish synagogues. And they come back to Antioch and they report their work among the Gentiles. Now, if you'll notice in chapter 15, beginning in verse 1, it says, "And certain men came down from Judea and taught the brethren, saying, except ye be circumcised after the custom of Moses, ye cannot be saved." Oh, we got a big problem already, don't we? Here in Antioch, a congregation made up of Jews and Gentiles. And now we've got Jews who have become Christians. Now, I want to underscore that. We've got Jews who had become Christians. And the reason why I want to underscore that is, for a long time in my study, when I read about problems from the Jews that existed within the church, I had an idea that these were always unbelieving Jews. Well, that's not always true. We see in certain instances, as we have in Acts chapter 14, sometimes that was true. But that's not always true. Sometimes we have folks who have become Christians from a Jewish background that create problems within the church. And that's the case here. You'll note that to be the case in Acts chapter 21 as we go forward with the Apostle Paul returning to the city of Jerusalem. That means I'm completely out of time, doesn't it? That's just wrong. All right. Well, I want to start the study next time. Randy, I think, will be teaching the class next time with Acts chapter 15. I want you to study carefully Acts chapter 15. And here's the assignment. As you read through this chapter, you not only identify the problem, but you look carefully for the solution to the problem. How do they resolve the problem? Now, what I want to suggest to you is that the Lord's church today, from time to time, has problems. Would you agree with that? Can we resolve them exactly like they did? That's right. Yeah, we can. We can resolve it just like they did. But we need to study and learn how they resolved it. Okay? Now, that's for the next segment of our study.